Hello and welcome to a Touchdown Fracker podcast. I'm your host Lewis, and on this week's show our panel will be giving their reaction to last week's interview with Who Scored Editor-in-Chief Ali Tweedell. We will also be discussing some of our own ideas and thoughts around stats in football, as well as answering some of your listeners' questions. So before we get cracking, let's introduce today's guests. We have Palace fan Ruben. How you doing, Ruben?
Hi there, you alright?
We have Arsenal fan Mickey.
How you doing, guys?
We also have two United fans, Mario and Io. How you doing, guys?
Should have done us separately, mate. I'm alright, man.
No, you guys don't deserve that treatment. Right, Mario, I'll start with you. We'll start with the interview itself. I take it you listened to it, obviously. I hope you came prepared.
Yeah, definitely.
Good. How did you find the interview?
It was good, man. It was a welcome change. Because before the interview, I thought it was going to be normally how we do it, the four of us, and then all that kind of barraging in with questions. But then, when I thought about it, that wouldn't have made a lot of sense. But, yeah, I liked it. And there was one question that I was hoping somebody would have asked, but they didn't. Just the weight of goals in stats. So, you know, let's say somebody scores a goal in, like, a 5-0, like he scores a sixth goal, in comparison to somebody getting, like, a wonder goal or, like, an equaliser in a big match. Like, how are they weighted? Are they equally weighted? But you didn't ask that. But other than that, he left us a lot to think about, man. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Good. Ruben, you listened to the interview. Were there any surprising elements to the way Who Scored operate, or anything surprising that you found that Ali said?
I wouldn't say surprising. It was just it was very interesting the way he described how they measure the stats, such as the key passes and the pass before the assist, and how it must be sort of like a potential assist rather than just a sideways pass and stuff. So it was quite eye-opening in that sense. But I wouldn't say there was too many surprises. It was just interesting to find out how they did it.
Yeah. I asked Ali about how stats are used in American football, and he sort of said, I think his words were that It's more difficult to use the statistics they use in, like, NBA and NFL and baseball, because football is not a succession of set pieces and it's more difficult to assess. I mean, do you think there's anything we could learn from American sports in the way we use stats in football?
I think it's quite difficult because with American sports, for example, like basketball and American football is very role-specific, whereas football is a team game, for example, basketball. It's 5-on-5, so if one person makes a mistake, or one person has a particular individual brilliance, it has a greater significance than on a football pitch. So that's why stats are quite more prominent in American sports. But I do think that there's things we could learn, for example, like the depth they go into with stats. Like if you listen to like an American game, like NFL or something, the commentators are firing out stats quickly, and it's relevant and in-depth. So I think that's something that we kind of learn, rather than the typical, this person scored this amount of goals type thing. So yeah, I don't think it's completely different to our commentators, where, like, if you watch an NBA game, you might hear something like, Durant has scored 35, got 8 assists on 55% shooting in the last 17 times he's played in the West Coast or something crazy like that. Whereas in, when it comes to football, the stats are a bit more basic, like, Wayne Rooney scored 15 goals in 20 games against Aston Villa. There's so many stats that we could go into, like, we never really hear a commentator talk about key pass stats or pass percentage in game. So I think that's something where there could be room for improvement.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Mickey, I mean, you're a coach, so I'd like to hear your opinion on this. Ali believed that the general public, an average football fan, they're not quite there in terms of their understanding of how football stats should be incorporated into how to judge a player's performance or how to judge a player's ability. Do you think there's anything the media or clubs themselves could do to help educate fans in order to understand these statistics?
I think just by placing the focus on using stats
as an accessory to an understanding of football, and by just highlighting the fact that the basis of an opinion shouldn't be based on stats, but should be based on the context of the game, an actual view of the game. You know, it's a case of really highlighting that for the casual football fan, of saying, you know what, okay, so-and-so has got this many amount of goals, but you know, did you watch the game? What was the timing of the goal? Was it a goal that was a winner, or did it come after the team was already 3-4-0 up with a man down, so on and so on? So I just think if you're going to use one particular stat, I think it would help if they used other stats in conjunction with that, just to help build a bigger picture. I think that's one of the means that clubs could further educate the average football fan, because a lot of the time that's what just happens, whether it's a match report, because a lot of the time that's what it is, it's a match report either online or match of the day or certain highlights, maybe showing the statistics at particular times that are relevant to the game, which I think would further help.
Okay. I'll tell you what, there was an interesting thing. This question applies to everyone, by the way. I asked Ali about how do clubs use who scored, and he replied that clubs use who scored player rating systems, and I think he said I think he alluded to that certain scouts use their actual their strengths and weaknesses focus, their feature. Okay. Sorry,
yeah.
I just wanted to know what you guys thought about that, because that sounds very Football Manager-esque.
Yeah, it does. I think there's reason to do that. Like, I don't know what goes on in real football scouting, obviously, because I'm more of a FIFA Football Manager guy, and I haven't been there, but, you know, if you're looking for a player with a certain attribute, I guess it's a quick way of narrowing down who you want.
Right, yeah.
But it's still not a very thorough way. I'm sure they do more, and they don't just use that, but it's a very, it's not thorough in the research, but it is a quick way of narrowing down who you might want. So I can understand why scouts do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I do remember listening to the interview, and I do remember him saying that, obviously there's a certain level of research, and they do look at certain metrics to decide, okay, whether to give player A this strength or this weakness.
Yeah, and it's compared against the other players as well. That's what
exactly,
Ali said.
Yeah, exactly. So I think as long as there's a process, it's always going to be flawed. There's never going to be a foolproof means to measure someone's particular ability. But I think it is a decent process to do that, and just to make it easier for the casual reader.
Yeah.
I know of scouts that worked in a professional game, and what they'll tend to do, any statistics that they look up will always be backed up by video analysis. Always be backed up by video analysis. So I think this is very important to highlight that in the professional game, it isn't just a case of just looking at databases of a player's pass completion, key passes, touches on the ball, distance covered, so on and so on. I think it's important for the average footballing fan to know that at the top level of the game, even then, professionals use video analysis. They look at games, and they don't just look at it at once. They tend to view matches at least three times to pick up on things that they haven't seen, and that's what they use as the basis for their opinion. And then they'll use things like who scored. I even heard Football Manager.
Yeah, I've heard that before as well.
Yeah, even Football Manager, like literally.
Miles Jacobs, I think it is. I think he's very defensive of, I saw him and Stan Collymore having an argument, I think, about a year ago on Twitter. And Stan Collymore was basically saying, you know what, all you Football Manager hipsters make me sick. It's not a good way of judging about a footballer, judging how good a footballer is at or what they're good at. It's just a game. And Miles Jacobs basically replied saying, you know what, statistics have shown. I don't know how the statistics work on this front, but he basically said that 99% of the time, or something, I can't remember the exact statistic, But he said that their attributes and their statistics are so accurate that they get the ability and the potential right. So they can judge somehow whether the player is going to maximise his potential or grow into the attributes or that they've put.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll be honest with you. Like, I've been playing Football Manager since I was 11 years old. Mm. It's crazy to think I've been playing for almost 15 years. And for me, there's a reason behind that. Not just me, for a lot of people, there's a reason people don't call it a game. And if you hear about the way they compile the data, these are not just video. These are not people that are video game experts.
No,
people that compile the data are actually footballing people.
Yeah.
Actually stick with their clubs, actually day in, day out. Thousands of people across the world.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing that you can compare to the Americans, if you're in reference to your earlier questions to Io, is the fact that football is very much behind in terms of sports data and analytics. We're quite behind. So there is more, there's a lot of room for growth.
Mm.
And there is more respect to be given to people that work in data, in sports data. But it's just, again, don't use it as the basis of your opinion. Use it as an accessory.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's a good point there, Mickey. Mariah, Ali raised a good point about how he felt as though the younger generation were more in tune with statistics and more welcoming of statistics. I mean, what do you think it would take to maybe get the older generation on board? Because obviously, from their point of view, is that football existed before stats. And, you know, managers existed before stats, coaches existed before stats. I mean, is it an ignorant view from their side, or do you feel that they have some sort of basis to not be as accepting of stats in football?
You know what I think it is? It's a generational thing, because I get the same thing with my mum. She's a technophobe. Like, literally, I had to show her how to use Skype. I taught her how to properly use a laptop.
And you should get Ellis's mum to teach her how to use Skype.
Yeah, shout out to Ellis, man. Anyway, yeah, so I think it's a generational thing. And you know what it is? They've got a point, to be honest with you. Stats, when you're dealing with human beings, stats can only tell you so much, man. Even, you said something about 90% of how accurate Football Manager is. I most probably call that bullshit, because you can't predict how a guy's going to change, man, over the years. Something might just click in him, and, you know, you get a different player. And so I get their point, but...
Yeah, sorry to interject, like, just to carry on your point, Mariah, sorry. I think the thing is, with the continued emphasis on stats, and how readily available they are, I think with the older generation, and they do have a legitimate concern for this, is people, even in coaching, you lose the art that that intuition, that sense gets lost.
Exactly.
Because you're constantly looking at the numbers.
Yeah, like you might think a player's a good passer, but because the stats say he's not... Yeah. Maybe I wasn't right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the same sort of thing with, like, with betting as well. I mean, you can look at all the stats you want, their previous head-to-heads, their previous form, you know, certain things like that. But sometimes something doesn't replace the gut feel that you have, the intuition
exactly
that you get.
Thinking, man.
And sometimes sway your opinion. And then afterwards you think, I wish I'd just gone with my gut.
Exactly.
So I think a lot of people... especially the older generation, are used to going along with their gut and their intuition and their knowledge of what they have.
Well, because they grew up in a period where they had no choice.
Exactly.
When they went out to scout, they had to...
physically go and watch the player.
Yeah, and they had to develop that. And I think whenever you become set in a particular way of doing something, you don't really, you don't want to learn. You don't want to learn how to do it again. But I think... the best people are people that kind of use them. They don't let it completely take over their way of doing things, but they recognise the benefits of using things like data and sports data. And it's for me, it's always about adapting. So you marry the two. It's the old school and the new school. It's the same principle in football. You know, you always have to adapt, but you don't completely... take away what's made you successful in the first place. It's always about tweaking, it's adding the little bits. And I think if we're going to use statistics to analyse matches or performers, even managers, arguments and comparisons.
Win percentage ratio and all that stuff.
You know, win percentages, you know, trophies won, so on and so on, and they don't look at the actual, what I like to call the intangibles. For me, stats are the tangible things. It's the things that are there and they're clear to see, but the intangible things are a bit more subjective. There's a lot more interpretation that goes on, and that's...
It takes more skill. It takes more skill when it comes to the intangible things. I think the human side is a bit underrated. Like, I don't know how much research clubs do into players before signing them, like how the environment they thrived in terms of their role in the team, in terms of, you know...
Like, I think it's a very undeveloped discipline. I think it's a very undeveloped or maybe underused metric when measuring how good a player can be or how they'll suit the team. I think there's only certain clubs that really look into personality.
Certain players, like, you know, a manager has his style, and certain players just won't suit that style. And that means you shouldn't be signing him in the first place, you know? Like, maybe certain players need a bit more leeway to thrive. Like, I remember how Fergie's always had this reputation of being, like, a tough guy, but when it came to, like, Cantona, he knew just, like, I had to dial it down a bit, because if I tried to put the reins on him, it wouldn't work, and he reaped the rewards of it, really.
Yeah, put it this way, if you look at a manager, right, someone like ABB, because obviously he's young, and definitely, from what I know of him, and what I've been told, people that have worked with him directly, literally, they say he was very, very scientific, very, very statistically orientated, and so much so that that human ability to kind of assess someone on a personal level, that's where he was lacking. So
I can see that, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So there you have it, even at the top of the game with a manager, and there's other managers like that. So I think the best managers, they look at the two things. Someone like and that's why Mourinho, you know, is arguably at least one of the best, is because
who would you guys say is like an old school manager? If you guys had to have a guess, who do you think would be the manager who'd be like, you know what, I'm not using statistics,
Redknapp.
You think Harry Redknapp?
You listen up, Redknapp. Yeah. Redknapp would be stupid, purely more because he doesn't know.
But the reason I said I know someone who worked with ABB is because I got to talk to a guy called Peter Suckling, or Perry Suckling, one of the two. He was a first-team goalkeeper coach at Spurs. I don't know if he still is now, or Pochettino took over, but he was... And even Redknapp, he would kind of downplay his kind of footballing intelligence. He didn't want to come across that way. But he was kind of underrated tactically, essentially, that's what you said. But I could still see him being a type of manager that didn't really, how can I put it, didn't really embrace the kind of more new school of thinking.
Yeah.
You know, I do remember him calling out AVB, like all these managers with their 75-page dossiers.
Exactly. Someone like him, Neil Warnock.
Neil Warnock must be.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Like,
no, we're only mentioning British managers.
Do you know what? I find that a bit strange, because I would have imagined that some foreign coaches, especially the older generation, would have... I don't think maybe Fabio Capello or someone like Sven.
We are mentioning those guys, but I think...
Or Roy Hodgson. Like, Roy Hodgson strikes me as the type of guy you probably don't even know how to turn on his laptop.
I'll be pretty sick if Roy Hodgson was that way. I think what Roy Hodgson
said, in my opinion. Am I being a bit harsh there?
Yeah. I'm thinking of that, you know that Ryan that's going around when he's like happy then sad, really?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That Vine is quality.
I just feel like, back to your original question, I just feel like stats there, without the context, it's nothing really. I have to just agree with what Mickey's been saying. And it's tough, man, because how much detail are these guys really looking to go into? Because when you look at some of the moves, players, like, I know, like, we debate, like, okay, how much can you really comment on football when you have a player at the highest level, blah, blah, blah. But there's even some things that I can see as, like, an armchair fan. It just doesn't make sense to me, the moves they're making. And it's like, you guys are getting paid to do this. And even for my house, I can see this isn't going to work. And you're right, and it's like, boy, so, you know.
Mm.
in that regard, man.
Ruben, is there a statistic in football that literally makes you want to throw up every time you see it?
No, not really. I think pass completion is probably the one that's most overused and taken out of context sometimes. So that's annoying when people misuse them. But I can't really think of too many like completely irrelevant stats. Like if you're trying to make judge who's the best number 10, and say like two players have really similar physical attributes, then chances created is probably like one of the best ones to go to. So. No, I can't really think of a particular stat that people bring up a lot that's irrelevant, but pass completion can be the one that's used out of context the most, I think, yeah.
Ayo, I know you've got a few that make you sick.
Key passes. Like, how could... I remember I had this thought, and I saw Dennis Bergkamp say something. He goes, how could you tell me how a pass influenced the game? And that's what I like to know, because, for example, like, we're having a discussion, and people, like, I remember, I think it was... me, you and Leo, and he was like, oh, Ursul Kuyt had five key passes. I was like, well, what key pass? Because I was thinking, like, what key pass did he make? And then I found out that key pass leads to, like, if it leads to, like, a shot on goal, it's a key pass.
Yeah, that's what Ali said. I believe that a key pass is the assist. Or it could be...
It has to lead to a potential...
Yeah, so basically, if you pass it and someone cuts it back and they score, that's a key pass.
Okay, for example, a key pass would be... I've got the ball in, like, let's say, the right channel, and I've come back in play, and I've passed it across the box. Passed across the pitch, and you're 35 yards out. You hit it first time, and the keeper tips it just so far. That's a key pass. But why is that lucky? Because let's say I pass it to a guy like Sandro. So if Eriksen passes it to Sandro, and Sandro kicks it, and the keeper makes the save, that's a key pass. But let's say the person was cleverly he passed it to. It's the same pass, same accuracy, but because Cavani passes it on, it's no longer a key pass. So, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I don't like a stat that has 200 variables.
Yeah, I think that's the stat that's the most. It's got the most subjectivity about it.
Yeah, because even Ali seemed to be a bit like.
Yeah, he did, didn't he? He agreed with you that because he is quite a subjective. Because
that's the thing. The thing about it's creativity. I think a lot of people.
It's very hard to judge it, isn't it?
Yeah, like creativity is something that...
They named the stats something more tangible and objective.
Yeah, because when you think of creativity, it's a mental aspect anyway. It's very hard to put mental attributes into numbers.
There's two kinds of creativity as well, because this is another thing, another reason why you have to watch football to a certain level to make sense of stats, because you also have to look at the way teams are set up and how that individual... will play because of the way their team is set up.
Exactly.
For example, right, you may have a stat that for all intents and purposes defines creativity, so key passes in this respect. I remember reading something along the lines of Gerrard, because he had the most key passes out of another player, this is a debate I had with another individual, he was more creative than that person. But I was like, well, Gerrard plays in a more direct team where there's more off-the-ball runners, there's more pace to their game, and they play to create a lot of chances often.
They're more aggressive.
Yeah, they're just more aggressive. Whilst this other player could have the similar amount of creativity, but because there's a more patient build up to him.
Exactly.
You know, that's why he may not have as much key passes as Steven Gerrard. So that's why it's important to have not only think about watching that individual, but watch how that individual plays within that team.
Yeah.
Does his role dictate?
Also, one thing I also like, sorry to cut you off here, is like how that there's like kind of like because of I think he's kind of on the back of the whole Pep era with Barcelona and Spain, the tiki taka, like kind of a bit snobbish to other styles of play and executions of good bit of football. For example, like I think I was having this debate with somebody, like, oh, how can you say this person's good at creating chances when most of them are coming from crosses compared to through balls? Like, basically, I was like, end of the day. If this player is putting in great deliveries and is connecting, because it's still a hard technique to cross the ball, and the recipient has to time his run and supposed to connect the same way as the recipient of a through ball has to time his run and connect. So, like, there's kind of
I definitely agree with you. That's, it goes back to my question. It's just like, what do you define as creativity? Because like recently, creativity is, you know, kind of the more patient, more probing kind of tone. But creativity could have been
creativity. Do you know what I mean?
It's aesthetics, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. Aesthetics, style. And what I was going to say is, I think we were talking about it before, that influence. How can you... There's no stat for somebody's influence. Like, how can you put that on data to confirm that how influential they are on the match? So I think we were talking about Iniesta and Mata, and who was a better player. I think I was discussing it on Twitter the other day, and obviously the person agreed with me that it was Iniesta, but when you look at their stats, Iniesta, I don't think he scored over 10 goals in any season. I don't think he ever really puts up too many assists either, but you wouldn't even say him and Mata are on the same level as footballers. But when you look at the stats, it says Mata gets like almost 20 goals, 20 assists. So, you know, you have to watch and understand that Iniesta plays in a system where it demands more of him. He plays in less space. He might play the pass that unlocks the pass. So, you know, yeah, it's about context.
He's
man.
Also got to be less selfish as well.
Exactly. Much less selfish, actually.
Yeah. Mm. So,
I think, go on, Mickey.
I think at the end of the day, man, the easy solution to all of this is just people just watch more football. Try to understand it more. It's just that easy. Just watch more football and try to understand it more. Because then, you know, maybe your opinion may stay the same. You should say it will change. But at least it's a solid backbone.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's an informed opinion as opposed to a presumptuous one built on something that doesn't supply context. You know, and, you know, like we were saying before, there's that, you know, stats is purely scientific. It doesn't take into account the intangible things, you know, the style of play, the mental aspect of it as well, you know, so, you know, because influence may have nothing to do with what a player does on the ball.
Exactly.
So, for example, Raul, I mean, let's talk about influence in a negative sense, right? Messi for Argentina barely pressed. He barely pressed, if at all. But he still influenced them in a sense that because of his lack of pressing, it affected the defensive productivity of other players because now the midfield and the defence have more to deal with. Or, for example, you could talk about pressing in a positive sense. Where's that stat for the influence of their pressing? So for someone like, I don't know, like Jordan Henderson, right? His pressing game is highly influential to the way Liverpool played last season. But the only stat...
But if you put him in another system, it might not be.
Yeah, but if we were to use, okay, so what stat can we... you know, gather his pressing by, okay, distance covered. But his distance covered could be something very similar to another player that doesn't do anything close to the pressing he does.
Yeah.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean?
That's another one I don't like. I think I said it in the interview last week.
I like this covered.
Yeah. I only like it when I'm defending Mesut Ozil, and that's it.
No, because the thing with Mesut Ozil is, I can't remember what pundit it was. It was about David Beckham, who was playing central midfield, worked out for England, and I think he went to Turkey, where people are like, oh, he needs to show more passion, and he ran quite a lot, and he did players great, and then David Beckham ran way more than anybody else, but he goes, so this is between working harder and working smarter. That's why I like players like Mesut Ozil, because yes, Mesut Ozil may not cover as much distance as Jordan Henderson, but in the key moments of the game, Ozil puts in the right amount of running. Same as, like, I think Ronaldo, even defensively, he doesn't do a lot of, he won't see a lot of much move from Ronaldo. But in terms of that, he's very aggressive in his movement, he's running a lot, he's moving around. So, like, I don't like...
I think even with the pressing thing, like, a lot of people would think about this is covered, he must have worked hard, but it's like, well, it depends on how he's pressing. Yeah, because it's like, if you're just pressing and making the team lose shape, then...
What's the
benefit of what he's doing?
A lot of fans in United did that last season, where Welbeck will just press high, chase from side to side, and because he's pressing on his own, he's not pressing twos and threes and fours, he's just creating gaps on the pitch. So then they get people like, oh, Welbeck worked really hard for the team. Well, maybe that game, Welbeck's overrunning cost the team. Like, where's the stats to show how people are some guys like that, for especially the prime Barca team, Iniesta, Messi, Samuel Eto'o, all those guys, they press really hard the pitch and they won the ball back very quickly.
Mm. But do you think there is a stat that we could manufacture to, you know?
Nah, there's no way, because at the end of the day, right?
I think it's too detailed.
It's not even that. It just goes back to the fact that you have to understand what the team is trying to do and have a more thorough understanding of football, because it's like, okay, you can have a stat that measures that, but what's to say
trying to do. Yeah. So, for example, right, a team like Bayern Munich, I think Hinks is Bayern Munich, they had a particular kind of pressing plan where they're always trying to... They didn't so much want to show players down wide. There are times they actually want to show players into central areas. So they would actually press to have the opposition go to central areas. Mm. There is no stat to tell you that's what it looked like. They did that well.
Yeah.
There's, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, for me, it's a very, there's very much a limit.
Yeah.
As to what stats can actually show you.
Definitely. I think another thing is, I think we were talking about before the pod started about using stats to compare players, and one thing that bugs me is the defensive side of things. So a lot of people use that Squawker comparison matrix thing. And the first thing happened was when Debussy signed for Arsenal, you know, the stats came out to compare him with Sagnar, him with Rafael, him with Zabaleta. And they'll be like, oh, Debussy made more tackles per game than Sagnar, or, you know, won more headers per game than Sagnar. But, you know, that you can't use that to say, well, he's a better header of the ball, or he's a better tackler.
Exactly. For example, Debussy is likely to face more 1v1 duels than Sagnar is, because Arsenal tend to have around 55% more possession of the ball.
Yeah.
He is more likely to be facing defensive situations than battering Sagnar's.
Yeah.
So why, like, do you know what I mean? It's just context.
Of course, it's all context. That's why I think the comparison side of things, especially in certain positions, I don't like when goalkeepers, where it's like, oh, Keylor Navas had made the most saves in Europe last season. Well, duh, he's probably playing in one of the crappiest teams in Europe. Therefore, had to make the most saves.
How many shots is Manuel Neuer?
Exactly, I was just going to say that. Neuer would probably be one of the lowest in Europe. It doesn't mean he's the worst goalkeeper in Europe.
Exactly.
When you start, you know, there needs to be an element of context. And I really don't like that scorecard matrix thing.
I think if you're going to use... Anytime you use an individual stat, you're asking for trouble. Like, I don't even mind when people use stats in conjunction with other stats. So, for example, if we're talking about a goal scorer and how efficient he is, I'll use goal scored, shots on target, and chances converted. I'll use them in combination. And I think
that's what I said earlier.
You know, I think something like that would make sense. It's safer with passing. You know, chances created, times key passing, times pass completion, times distance, times area of the pitch. So in terms of a stat, I would use it in terms of distances from the opposition goal to where the player was.
Yeah.
So a guy who has 90% pass completion, 25 yards or 25 metres from the opposition goal, I'm tend to hold in higher esteem than someone who has 95 pass completion in 70 metres away from opposition goal. So if you are going to use statistics, use them in combination with others.
Yeah, I mean, as I was saying before the pod, I recommend everyone to download the 442 magazine app, and that has some really, really good... If you're into statistics, that has some really, really good match-by-match statistics, especially in play as well. So, especially when it comes to passing, they measure it by short, long, medium, defensive third, medium third, attacking third. Yeah. And how many of those are completed? You know what I mean?
Even with dribbling, same thing. You know, the distances in the players travel with, distance from goal, area of the pitch, how many players taken on in that one dribble, things like that. It's not just. I think sometimes people get put off because now you're making the game more complex, you're overthinking things. But it's just like, I think as long as you have a wide depth.
Also, quick stats of, you know, when somebody says something about, I think Lewis asked what stats do you like, take-ons. What's a take-on? I want to know how to do it, because, person A goes completely round and through defender A, or if I just run down the line quicker than him, a bit of coverage, and put a ball in the box. And I want that. How do you quantify take on? Because I've seen some take on. There's no way this guy is taking on more players than this guy. So it's just like, do you know what I mean? That, I think that's a difficult stance, and I think the people kind of tend to be anti-stance because, as just as what Mickey said, I wanted to build on it about how, in relation to individual stats, football is an 11-a-side sport.
Yeah.
So there's too much interdependence on your teammates.
Yeah.
Way too dependent. Whereas basketball, for example, or tennis, it's more individual based. For example, basketball is 5v5. Individual stats are very key because you have a massive influence on the game. Everybody has a massive influence. Everyone has a massive influence on the game. For example, like, let me give you an example. Arsenal beat. I didn't even see the game. Okay, let me use the game I watched. Man United versus Real Madrid. Well, no, Man United versus LA Galaxy. You can look at Sanchez for let's say, I don't know, one of our centre backs. How much defending was he doing in that game? And say he plays in that type of game 30 times a season, compared to, let me see, I don't know, let me think of I don't know, who plays in Newcastle back? Colaccini?
Yeah, Colaccini, Steven Taylor.
Okay, no, forget that.
Yeah,
let's say Ron Vlaar, because Aston Villa probably in another relegation battle this year. Say, for example, somebody like Sergio Ramos, and you compare to Ron Vlaar. More likely or not, probably winning more headers on average, probably attempting more tackles on average, but you can't use that as a comparison because they're basically in essence in two different games. Because one person's engaging all the time, another person's not.
Yeah.
So, and I also think it's best to use a bit of wisdom when you compare stats. For example, like with a team like Arsenal, if you talk about defenders, especially fullbacks, guys like Gibbs and your Debussy's, you may want to look at stats that are more of the ball because they will tend to be on the ball a lot more. Then if you're looking at a team like Stoke, you may want to look at their defence. It's like, okay, how likely is this guy to win a header? How likely is this guy to get a blocked shot? So I think if there's a bit of sense and context used towards stats, anybody really mind. But I think the people kind of tend to watch football kind of get the feeling that it's kind of a cop out. Like, I'm sure you guys have seen there's been a kind of a growth in how people talk about football as well. When it wasn't really like this 2-3 years ago. Am I lying, boys?
No.
Not everyone had these pictures of their favourite team in their display pictures and whatnot. Never. Only a certain few people did. But now football's getting a bit more popular, which is obviously good for us to talk about all the time. You can kind of see who's tend to be people who understand football and actually follow it, and then you get quote unquote to football hipsters. So I think that's just the main problem.
Yeah. Yeah. No. All right. Well, I think we'll leave the statistics side of things there. If you want to catch the interview of Who Scored, if you haven't caught it already, it's on our website. It's on SoundCloud. It's on YouTube, iTunes, the lot. So there's no excuse not to go and listen to it. And it's only 40 minutes long as well, so you're not going to be wasting too much time. We'll move on to some listeners' questions. So I've got a few. Do you guys have any that you want to get started with, or...?
Yeah, I've got one that's quite interesting. Yeah, it's from Sweeper Keeper One. He says Iker Casillas is better than Diego Lopez. Agree or disagree?
I think it's hard to judge. I don't think Diego Lopez is better, but I think right now it's hard to judge because if you look at Casillas' consistency for like over 10 years, that is no fluke. Any way, shape or form. I think at the end of the day, his falling out at Real Madrid was partly mental and partly politics. Because if you look at the dressing room, 19, 20 years of age, so politics and Mourinho, because as a goalkeeper, you know, when you're on the bench for a certain amount of time, that will obviously affect your confidence, your ability to a certain extent. I don't think Diego Lopez has done anything whatsoever to say he's better than Iker Casillas right now. I think it's actually a case of his form has been better. He had more trust, and that stood him in good stead with Real Madrid last season and also the season before whilst Mourinho was still there during the latter half. I think just Casillas is going through a bad run.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't feel confident in saying Diego Lopez is not better than Iker Casillas.
No.
Because that would be essentially calling out Diego Lopez a world-class goalkeeper,
yeah.
Which for me, he hasn't demonstrated that as of yet.
I mean, speaking as a goalkeeper, I would find it like, I'd be a bit peeved off if I was judged solely on, say, the last 6 months of, or the last year of my career. When, and I think people have the tendency,
you've been around for as long as Kassir,
exactly, so. People have the tendency to be a bit short-sighted, and you know, you got to remember that class is permanent, and there's no doubt about it, Casillas was one of the best goalkeepers, probably still is one of the best goalkeepers on the planet, and you know what, Diego Lopez deserved his place in the team, no doubt, but you know, Fabianski displaced, sorry?
Because he was in better form.
Because he's in better form, and he deserved it. Yeah, he deserved to be there. There's only one spot on the pitch for a goalkeeper, and that's the harsh realities of being a goalkeeper. But it doesn't mean that that goalkeeper is better than the other.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Mariah, do you have an opinion on that?
With Casillas, I'm not sure. Like Mickey said, it seems like it's mental. Will he recover? Because obviously you fell out with Mourinho, but we know Mourinho is a difficult character. But Ancelotti's come in, and he still hasn't fully gotten his number one spot back. You watched him at the World Cup, he wasn't impressive either. Mm. So, you know, there's a point where you can't go on what somebody did in the past. Like, I mean, every time Ronaldo steps on the pitch, every time Messi steps on the pitch, there's somebody calling them out and saying, he's not as good as they say he is, blah, blah, blah. And I don't think, no matter what Casillas has done, he should get the same sort of leeway personally. We'll see how it goes this season.
The thing is, I think a goalkeeper is a special case. I think I've definitely been enlightened in recent months. Like, goalkeeping mentally is a whole other discipline. It's a whole other discipline. And I just think that, you know, you shouldn't make too much of an exception, but you do have to bear in mind the whole kind of being in and out of a team. There's a reason why you don't rotate goalkeepers.
Yeah.
You know, they need to feel like they're number one to be on their best. There's no goalkeeper that's just come in not feeling like they're number one and being amazing. You know, they have to feel like they are. They've got the full backing of the coach. Yeah. And I don't think Casillas has had that for a while.
But why doesn't he have that? That's the question.
I think I've heard rumours about, like, his application in training, and I don't know if that's true, but
that's two top coaches now who haven't been happy with him.
Mm. I mean, but you got another thing you got to remember with Casillas. I'm not trying to make a judgment on his character or anything like that, because I don't know the geezer. But when you're number one goalkeeper, what age did Casillas become number one? 19 years old, was it?
Yeah, 18
years old, and he's now what, 32, 31?
Yeah.
That's what, like, 13 years of being number one goalkeeper with zero competition. You had guys like Jerzy Dudek signing for Real Madrid to basically go on the Jolly Boys outing and pick up, you know, medals.
To be fair, for Spain, he always had a competition.
For Spain, he did. But, you know, at Real Madrid, he never, ever had competition. And that's bad for a goalkeeper. I know we've seen with Arsenal, I mean, Wenger's just brought in Ospina to really, really push Chesney. And, you know, there's no doubt about it that Chesney's form dropped off when there was no competition there.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just a way of it catching up with Casillas, complacency kicking in. And
I think at the end of the day, it's just like I think it's more a case of mental fatigue.
And, yeah, you know, being at the top for so long.
Like, literally.
With no dip as well. Casillas didn't really go for a dip.
And as captain. And then so when you come back?
I think he just needs a coach. He just needs a coach to instill some confidence in him. Because
he's still, like, being afraid to go, he's still, that's kind of like, you're not at the latter stages of your career. He can literally
go for another 8 years. Oh, no, of course, our goalkeepers can play till they're 40, but
yeah, you can literally go for it.
I think he's just going for a blip at the moment. I think a lot of it with goalkeeping, it's mental, it's all decision making. As soon as you're mentally impaired, or you don't have the confidence to carry out your duties, you start making mistakes. And the best goalkeepers are the ones that make the least mistakes. It's not the best goalkeepers aren't the ones who make the most spectacular saves. It's the ones that make the least mistakes. And
why don't I ask Lewis here? What is it? It's kind of like a phenomenon where teams are getting, like, two very, very capable goalkeepers.
Yeah.
Because, for example, like Bayern, they just got Pep Reina.
Yeah.
Spurs, Vaughan, Chelsea, Quartars, and Cech. Even United, Lingard's a good, Lingard's a good keeper.
See, I don't think it's a viable long-term thing.
Arsenal, Ospina, and
Chesney.
And Chesney. Yeah. I hate spelling that guy's name. Yeah, but like, it's a myth. But like, also, but why are these goalkeepers going to clubs?
Like, traditionally, goalkeepers always used to, there always used to be one number one. Whatever club you look at, go through history, there's always been one number one goalkeeper. Then you have a reserve goalkeeper who is reserved by nature. He probably shouldn't even be playing at that level of the game. But
yeah, I'm not understanding this whole kind of like why two number ones.
Yeah,
that's going on.
What I'm trying to understand, Mickey, is why they're doing it. Why the second number one is doing it to themselves?
Yeah. Like I can't work out for the life of me why Ospina has joined Arsenal. I can't work it out.
You're actually just banking on an injury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it is, but you know that what you just said about Casillas being unchallenged at club level for 13, 14 years.
No.
I'm
talking about the individual goalkeeper that's going there to be number two.
So
even though
you can be number one.
There's no way Pep Werner went about to buy him if he's going to display his manual.
No way. I don't know why he's gone there.
Because I do not think he's disabled.
Yeah. And Pepe, let's face it, Pepe Reina is a really, really good goalkeeper. And I don't know why Bayern Munich have... this is another thing, I don't know why Bayern Munich... Well, actually, I suppose I can see why they would have done it for the competition side of things, but why are they offering... I don't know how much he's on, but I would imagine that he's not on a small amount of change, and I don't really understand why they would give their second choice goalkeeper on that amount of money.
But I don't get it for some like guys like Vorm, guys like...
Because you ain't displacing Lloris.
Especially Pep Reina, who I think is still an excellent goalkeeper.
How dare you to do that? What? Nothing.
We'll never know who's out that one. I don't know Ellis is on it.
But it wasn't mine.
But I think, just getting back to that though, I mean, there is a good point being that could be made about, we saw Fabianski last year lift the FA Cup with Arsenal, and it has become a common theme now that you have your league goalkeeper, and then you have your cup goalkeeper.
True, so, that's a very good point.
Maybe
it's that kind of way of thinking, because even Real Madrid did that, because Casillas started all of the Champions League matches.
Yeah,
and I think he started all of the
Copa del Rey in the Champions League, didn't it?
Yeah, I think that's what Chelsea would do as well.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe these players are thinking it as like, well, you know what? It's an opportunity to win a tournament. You know, I'm going to be playing. Say, well, if you're in the Champions League and
you can easily get like 20 games.
20 games if you're given the opportunities, and then
yeah,
I mean, I can speak from an Arsenal perspective. Chesney got replaced last season by Fabianski.
Yeah, but sorry, boys, that was my family. Yeah, but nah, is that good enough though? Like, your Pep Reina, I think
Reina is not
still
playing in the Champions League, bro.
Reina will not play.
Reina's not playing in the Champions League. I'll take this for free.
I think he's just done it to get a move to Spain. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
To Germany.
Reina's ability.
I say Spain.
On the bench. Why? Pep Reina could be a good top goalkeeper for somebody else, so why is he chilling on the bench?
Medel's name. Medel.
Is Mignolet a better keeper than Reina?
No way.
Why did Liverpool get rid of him? Did he want
to... I heard something about Rodgers, not him and Rodgers falling out.
Because
he's a better goalkeeper than Mignolet, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I just asked that. Yeah. I'm just wondering.
Yeah.
Not really a big fan of Mignolet.
No, I'm not a fan of Mignolet either. He's young, but... There's a lot of better young goalkeepers out there than Mignolet. So,
what do you think the situation will be with Peter Cech and?
It's not a viable long term situation. One will go.
Like he's going to put Courtois in goal.
One will go. It'll be. I'd be surprised if Courtois starts. To be fair, I think Cech will start, and then Mourinho will slowly introduce Courtois, and then Cech will be off.
Both of them are well crossed. Neither of them should be spending any time on the bench.
No, exactly.
I think Courtois will start, because I don't think there's no way Courtois is not forcing a move to Atletico if he's going to be on the bench at Chelsea.
I see Mourinho being there long term now, so.
I just think Mourinho would have said to him, look, give it 6 months, you will be Chelsea's number one. I just need to ease Cech out.
Yeah, but you forget that. Yeah, okay. He was at Atletico Madrid, Champions League 7th.
Yeah, possibly.
And he's been in that country for like 2-3 years.
But are Atletico Madrid going to front up? Because let's face it, how much is it going to be to buy Courtois?
Maybe a world record.
It'll be a world record for a goalkeeper. It'll be more than Buffon.
Yeah, true. But they're willing. They're definitely willing to grab him. So I don't know. But I think it's Chelsea. I think if Chelsea have any sense, they'll just sell Cech and just keep Courtois.
Yeah, so it's not a viable long term.
So they're going to make a profit on Cech because they got it for like £4 million. So.
I don't understand how Chelsea are just extorting teams. You know, like I'm like, listen, you guys are getting money.
Now listen, shall I tell you how happy I was when I heard the PSG president say that he can afford Di Maria? I was like, who told you to buy David Luiz for 50 M's? Imagine, think about it. Because you bought David, don't get me wrong, I think David Luiz is a good player, but you bought him for €50 million. £50 million.
£30 million would have
put
30-20
Marquinhos instead.
Exactly.
And then half of that would have got him, surely.
£30-25 million. That creative midfield spark, which PSG have been lacking so much in Champions League, was put on the plate for you and Di Maria, but you can't afford it. Good for you. Good for you. So happy.
So they would have to sell Cavani, right?
And they can't.
How do you guys feel about... There's a bit of a theory going around that. PSG basically bought Luiz to have the World Cup winning centre-back pairing in terms of Thiago Silva and David Luiz.
Backfired on them.
It was a risk, but, I mean, in terms of a commercial...
And I think it will fit PSG's what they're trying to do in terms of expansive type of football. Well, I don't think they can afford that as much with Alex.
Alex has left anyway.
So, and it makes sense. I just don't understand why they bought Marquinhos just to go and buy flipping David Luiz.
I'm even
seeing Barcelona trying to offer 35 mil for Marquinhos.
Like, it'd be worth it.
Marquinhos had one season, I swear.
I don't know, because I think probably
be better than PK. Bartra at the moment is pretty good, but Marquinhos.
Bartra, that's the person that you really need to be focused on, because if he gets coached right, Bartra will be a very important player.
And he's only like 22, right?
Yeah, he's not that young. He's, you know, Puyol wasn't better than him, as a centre half at his age. And that's Puyol. You know what I'm saying? Puyol was highly rated, but at the time he was playing right wing back.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, for me, PK, Bartra, they've got Jeremy Mature now, and I think they probably, maybe another one, maybe Vermaelen, because I think Song is going to go to the reserves, because Luis Enrique, I think he said that he's going to play Mascherano as a holding midfielder this season.
Song's going to Barca B?
Can he even play for them?
Yeah.
Can he play for Barca B?
Why not?
I thought there was like an age restriction on it or something.
No, adult training, that's a proper league.
Really? No. I know the league is a proper league, but I thought Barca B put there.
You have to be registered. You can't be registered for both teams.
Yeah. Because you have to transfer over or something, don't you?
So they're just gonna lodge him in Barca B for the whole season?
It depends for me. It depends on the game.
I think Man United should sign him, to be honest.
When I was calling for Son,
that's when you know it was dark days for midfielders. I called for Son, Iguarin, Filet.
I'm not gonna lie, when Chelsea fans were asking for Iguarin, I was holding my head. I was just like, are you serious? Iguarin is like, he's an app footballer. He's another one of these app footballers that will just shoot from any distance. He don't care. he's there for just athleticism and shooting from distance. That's all Warren is there for.
Yeah, there's 2 weeks in January he was looking like hot property, innit?
Yeah, bro, I was just like, what?
His value decreases by the day.
Say that again?
Guarin's value decreases by the day.
Yeah, like
everyone just realises, because I don't think he'll start for Inter next season.
Nah, definitely not. 100% not.
I saw a link to Manchester United the other day. I was thinking, skin.
Mm.
They just got Herrera, and Guarín can't defend, even though it wouldn't make sense. I mean, he'd add more depth, than he's everyone's better than Cleverley, but it's not the type of midfielder they need.
Guys, I've got, go on.
I've not got a question, but I've got, like, well, it's kind of a question. Junior,
whatever his name is, you know, Junior.
But Sandico Junior.
He's basically said on Twitter, what's your most controversial opinion? So I was thinking if everyone could come up with like three controversial opinions on football, so we could discuss them.
Sanogo will score 15 goals in all competitions this season.
Jesus Christ, you went out there.
Wow.
You really went out there.
And that's all based on what I saw in training today.
Alright, two more.
Vidal's overrated. I don't know how controversial that is.
No way. Whoa.
I don't like Vidal that much. He's not my type. I don't really like box to box.
I didn't say he's not good. I said he's overrated.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I don't think he's good as our fans.
So overrated in terms of people saying he's the best box to box midfielder in the world.
He probably is.
He's in the conversation, but I just think in terms of an actual footballer, how.
Yeah, I don't really like him that much.
How rated he is, I think.
My United buying him because one, he's a gazillion times better than what we have for one. Yeah. And two, just so I can laugh at everyone who said that United can't sign any world-class players. That's just the only reason why. Personally, I'd rather us get, like, Lind and Classy because they just want to make a ball. I just want a player who will just sit on the ball. That's me personally.
Yeah, puts him up there. I think
my opinion is that Yaya Touré is vastly overrated.
And you're not alone. I think when you say someone's overrated, what's the consensus on Yaya Touré?
That he is. Do you know what? People are split. You know. I don't.
That's what I'm saying. Like for me, that has to be a consensus.
The reason why I say I think he's overrated, I'm not saying that he's not a ball or anything, but when people put him in the top five midfielders in the world, I think that's vast overrated.
Do you not think he's in the top five?
I personally don't think he's anywhere near.
I don't know if he's in the top five. I don't know if he's there.
No, he's nowhere near. Because not just ability wise, but why would you put him there? Because he bangs in the Premier League. And even in the Premier League, does he bang to that top five level extent? No.
The thing is, I don't think, if you're talking about the consensus, I'm not talking about my individual opinion. I don't know if you were to ask, generally speaking, to the Twitter universe or whatever, who the top five in the world in centre mid position, I don't think he'd be there.
I think he would. Do it today.
We'll do it today.
Iniesta, Fabregas. I think everyone put Busquets because they thought they had to.
People get rated by people who watch football properly. But
then how do you determine that? But if you ask Twitter, if you put it out on Twitter, I guarantee you Yaya Touré will be in the top five for.
I think he'll be in the top five. 100%.
Because I've done it bad times, so he's always there.
Yeah.
He's too productive.
He can't hold a candle to guys like Luka Modric.
What's another overrated? Who hasn't done their overrated opinion? Up there, what was the question, sorry? Controversial opinion. Ruben hasn't done one, right?
Is my mic working?
Palace are going to make Champions League, yeah?
Yeah, it's working.
I don't really think I have many controversial opinions. I'd say Gibbs is better than Shaw. Smalling should arguably start for England. And Barkley's overrated.
Daniel Swagadore.
I'm not doubting. He's very. Yep. He's entertaining to watch. I like having him in the England squad, and he's exciting. But his ability to break on the ball and his acceleration and stuff disguises the fact that his passing in the final third is disappointing.
Decision making.
Yeah.
But that will come though.
But at the moment, I think he's slightly overrated.
Look, I think people are giving their rating his ability potential. In terms of his ceiling. In terms of same thing I think people do with Jack Walsh a lot. They rate.
If everything comes together, what currently he will be. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying?
That's fine. My controversial opinion, I'm not going to say the one I said it before. This is the one I want to discuss at length. Daniel Sturridge is overrated.
What?
Give some reasons, Nick.
Yeah.
I'm a massive Daniel Sturridge fan, but I think people, like, personally, when people put him, like, in the same category as the Karen Benzema's, the Wayne Rooney's.
Oh my God.
I think it's cheeky because another day somebody said Benzema or Sturridge, and I said, oh, Benzema. And they're like, are you crazy? I was like, huh?
What is about Daniel Sturridge?
I remember when we had that long debate. For me, I don't know if you guys remember. We had that long debate.
Rooney, Sturridge, Rooney, Sturridge.
No, but that was Sturridge and Benzema. It was Sturridge and Benzema. It was on the timeline.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We were watching a Liverpool match. It was me, you, Mickey, Ife, and I think Swag Daniel. And we were at it for ages, and we were like, how can you call him better than Benzema? And they were just sending us
so
crazy.
Bonkers.
It's about Sturridge. I think with the thing Sturridge is the street baller that made it. Like, he's the gold guy, the Power League guy who made it. And I think, because we kind of relate to him on that sense, I think we kind of overrate him. I don't know if I articulate it firstly speaking, but I think it's a thing where he's obviously you judge a striker or any player, but by the fundamental role that they have. So I'm a judge of defender. The fundamental role is to defend, and a midfielder, how many chances he creates or how many chances he may stop if he's a defensive midfielder. An attacking midfielder, the same way. We judge him off the fundamental role of their position, right? But I think the modern game and the best players do more than that. Like, they do as much as the other side. They do as much facilitating as they do provide the end product. And I think outside of Daniel Sturridge's end product, which is something that can't really be questioned, because I don't question his end product, but
I say the best strikers are the ones, in my opinion, this is my opinion, that can always look dangerous without even scoring that game.
Last season, I watched
Suarez, five games without scoring. I think he got man of the match all six games.
That's crazy. Like, for me, I've never heard anyone say Suarez playing sick all the time of the match when he hasn't scored.
Sweat out. Yep.
Do you know what I mean? That's the thing about Suarez. Like, Suarez will get the goals, but like, even when he was playing versus Man City, both games, especially the game of the A he had, he was a menace.
He was against Arsenal.
5-1 against Arsenal, but he was moving crud. And that's the only reason I say he's overrated, because he gets put alongside those strikers like Benzema, like Lewandowski, I even heard him get compared to Zlatan. I was like, what, are you actually doing? Really?
Zlatan?
At one point, I think it was like midway throughout the season.
Can you just name and shame that person, please?
Daniel was definitely involved.
Daniel Sturridge are going out, so you can't even.
That's what I'm saying. It's a thing where it's like, I think obviously goals is part of it, and it's still the fundamental responsibility of a striker. No one's denying that, but I think the best strikers are the ones where even when they're not scoring, they're sort of dangerous. That's not to say that Daniel Sturridge doesn't have the ability, because I do think he has the ability to play well without scoring, but his actual performances haven't reflected that, and that's the only reason I can't put him alongside the Suarez's, the Benzema's. Van Persie, to a lesser extent. For me, I prefer Van Persie maybe a couple more years ago. I think especially...
Ferguson made him a nine, a poacher, and I don't like that's why if you proper United fans will tell you that Rooney's still more important than us at Van Persie, because in games, not because of ability, it's because of the roles they do. Because Van Persie, if he doesn't score, he actually doesn't score.
I've got another controversial opinion, and it's going to be along the same lines. I think a strike partnership of Rooney and Welbeck will look better than a strike partnership of Rooney and Van Persie.
I was having this very same discussion today.
Rooney and Welbeck bang together. Like, unbelievably.
And I think Van Persie and Welbeck would look better than Rooney and Van Persie as well.
Yeah.
Because Rooney and Tevez, they're very similar, but that is the best strike partnership I've seen hit the Premiership, in my opinion.
I'm not gonna lie. Aguero and Tevez were dangerous.
But they were only dangerous for like 6 weeks.
I think if they kept them together, they would have been wrapping it like.
They were on the same wavelength. They thought the same. They're so similar, and it just worked. Rooney kind of needs a strike partner who's like, they're quick. And you know that whole thing that Percy talking about, he's in my zones and da-da-da-da-da-da. He wasn't even bullshitting. Like, they end up stepping on each other's toes, like, when they're playing together. That's right.
No, but I personally think that they, like, you can see, because there's a lot of games where they have created goals for each other. So that was more in the Ferguson season, because obviously they're both very intelligent players.
Yeah.
But I think it's us, the way we play, I think that there's a way we could play where they could both play and they could both back. It's just about developing and understanding each other. Certain players develop and understand very quickly, and certain players take a bit more time.
I think it does depend on the system, but I can't think of a system where that would work.
I'm telling you, right now, this season,
if it's Rooney, Mata,
and Van Persie stay fit, together they'll probably clear 60, 70 goals. I promise you, this season. If they all stay fit.
I can see that.
Keep playing 3-4-1-2.
Well, if we play that formation, all three of them, they're going to go crazy this season. That's my personal opinion.
Guys, any more listeners' questions that don't have anything to do with... the upcoming season, because next week we're going to be doing a season preview, so I kind of want to leave them till next week.
Okay, sure.
So does anyone have any?
Give me a second and check.
I've got one from Pharaoh T.
Yeah, go on.
He says, can we name some strikers that we can expect to become top strikers soon, as no top strikers are available at the moment? Well, other than maybe Cavani.
Kevin Volland.
Wilson for Manchester United, or just a young British talent.
Top striker?
Yeah, Wilson's a banger.
He's sick.
I would say Kevin Volland from...
Hoffenheim.
Absolute menace.
What position is he at nine?
He's a nine, but he could play out wide too, but he does play nine.
Him and Firmino's link-up, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I've seen them a couple of times. Hoffenheim score goals for fun. They're just shit.
Yeah, for Hoffenheim, he does tend to play more so out wide.
Yeah,
but he is like naturally he's a central forward. Where else?
What about a Muriel guy? Is he good? I haven't seen
that guy needs to stay fit and like when he's fit, not like injury. He's not so much injury. Like literally just fit.
I saw him 2 years ago and he was like looking crazy, like some next Ronaldo. Yeah. But then last season he couldn't even get into the Udinese team. He was looking fat.
He didn't go to
the
World Cup either, did he?
Yeah, like boy.
So someone needs to take a risk on him, probably, and you know,
I would say
give him like a lead role.
Origi, he looks pretty good.
Who?
Origi.
Yeah,
he did look really good at
that. I think Sonogo as well. Like,
the thing is crazy. I would not be surprised if he made it.
I'm telling you, Sonogo. Yeah, he's gonna become Arsenal's all time greatest goal scorer.
I'm saying the other day, like for me, he just has this personality where.
Personality is everything, man.
I'm a sound like
Sam Allardyce,
but he gets about.
He gets in and around.
Running around, you know, he's
intricate. He knows the channels well. He puts his heart on his sleeve. Well, I hate the type of players.
Even though obviously it's youth level, and you could kind of factor in his physique in comparison to players of the same age group, but his scoring record. You know, coming up at Auxerre and at France. Remember, he bodied the under-20s World Cup. Like, he bodied it. Like, him and Pogba were, like, the best players. So, there's definitely... For me, it's just something... If something happened, I would not be surprised.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I saw DJ Drogba, like, the way he stepped up. Like, you could see the change. Like, when he was 24, 25 when he joined Chelsea, and his touch was just as bad as Sonogo's.
Was he older?
No, he was about 24, 25.
Yeah, 24, because he was about 23 at Marseille.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I'd say about 24.
So, not to say he's going to replicate DJ Drogba, like, I don't know. But
those kind of cases are like, they're not common, but it's the character of the player.
If he showed the application, then I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, he's a nuisance. But on a serious note, is there any other...
Striker.
Yeah, strikers.
I don't know if it would count. I was going to say Immobile.
Hmm.
I think Immobile may really come out as like one of the best in Europe.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout, but... I think that is a good shout, actually.
Who else? Trying to go
back. Depending on how many games he gets at Juve, Morata could really improve.
He's a baller.
He's a baller.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one, actually. Yeah. He just got injured, didn't he? How long's he out for?
Did he? They've still got Llorente and Tevez as well, haven't they?
Yeah, they have.
Juventus get too many strikers. They always have about five strikers.
Have they still got Vucinic as well?
Yeah, I think they
get rid of
him, aren't they?
Oh, are they?
Sorry, guys,
they've still got Giovinco.
Giovinco, yeah.
Has anyone seen this? What United are refusing to comment on Arturo Vidal transfer?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, how long have I been telling you? How long have I been telling you that? I'm not even trying to banter you lot. Vidal is coming to Manchester United.
Yeah, you just said that a while ago. So
I don't think you, maybe you forget what club Manchester United.
No, he is coming.
We signed a player, and the guy magically ended up at Chelsea. Trust me. Manchester United and transfers. I don't believe it.
Oh, right, who was that? Who happened that?
Mikel.
No, but that was just dodgy.
Wow, Ian Robin was chilling in our training ground in Carrington, and then next week I hear he was at Chelsea.
No, but that's how they do it, man.
Like, yeah, but that happens all the time. That happens all the time, man.
Chelsea no, but a few players, you know.
It happens to everyone.
Like, you lot are talking like the way you did in that kidnap Berbatov. Like, please.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Ferguson said, "I'm Man City. We're meant to speak to him." He's like, "Nah. Picked him up from the airport real quick." Yeah, it's cash. Ain't nobody got time for that. That's what we should be doing now.
So, how Arsenal stole Ramsey from Man United?
It was a Man United player like a month ago, man. I was just like, yeah, I came to terms with it.
Mm. Actually, this Cuadrado to roll that I'm dancing.
I haven't watched him enough to have an opinion on him, you know. So I might try and check out a few of his games, man. What is he worth to play wing back? Yeah.
He's so. And I think obviously, when people say, what could he defend? But we're not saying.
Is he a right wing back or a left wing back?
Right. He's played. He's best as a winger.
But is he going to get ahead of Ashley Young?
Lewis.
Listen, from what I'm seeing, Ashley Young is like the new Jesus Christ reincarnated right now.
People not insulting him in his mentions anymore, man.
I know, that's what they keep it up because it's been underperforming
for so long. But now he's doing alright.
Yeah.
Oh, but Cuadrado will be a dream, man. It'll be just good to have an exciting player to watch again at Manchester United.
Yeah.
Like, when obviously we've got Rooney and Mata, but like somebody who actually generally just takes people on for. I think that's why United fans love Welbeck and Yanazai so much, because they actually commit players and go past them.
Yeah.
But Cuadrado will just be great to watch. I want to get him. Yeah. But we'll see.
Guys, do we have a last question we can do before we wrap things up?
I got one for you guys.
Go on.
Who's your favourite player from yesteryear, like as you're growing up? Who's your favourite? Name. Three
Ronaldo. Yeah,
Lewis Ronaldo or Cristiano?
No, Lewis. Okay. Good. Basically, anyone from like from that Gazzetta Sports on Channel 4. Anyone during that era.
Zidane, obviously.
Anyone Totti. Playing that era.
I love Francesco Totti and.
Because that was the only foreign football I used to watch as a child.
Now I never got to see these players in their prime.
I hate that. You know, I hate that. There's so many players that I wish I watched, like players in the '80s. Like,
yeah. I can't lie. My top three: Patrick Vieira, Thomas Rosicky.
Thomas Rosicky.
Yeah, I love. Pablo Aimar was my third one.
Yeah, like Thomas Rosicky, Patrick Vieira, and it's a throw up between Michael Owen and Henry.
Thierry Henry's like, has to be in there, but.
Yeah.
I was Totti, Zidane, and Aimar. I love Pablo Aimar, man.
Okay, I want to do players that never played for my club. My favourite by distance, Juan Román Riquelme, the best number 10 that's ever played a game. Don't argue with me, I don't care. Kaká.
Oh, yeah. Kaká.
I'm torn between Andrea Pirlo and Luis Figo.
Yeah.
I wasn't even a Figo fan like that, I'm not going to lie to you. I respected him. Okay, if we're going to do players, Van der Vaart, when I saw him, was under 17s. Like, I was, how old was I? This is like, 2001, 2002? Oh my god, this year is going to be way back. Yeah, Thomas Rosicky, Van der Vaart, Michael Owen.
I would say mine would be Ronaldo, I always had a fascination with Ariel Ortega.
Hey, Ortega.
Ortega was like the biggest myth. Like, everyone loved Ortega, but I don't think people knew why. Ortega was always like everyone, Harry Ortega, but it's like, what did he ever do of note?
Yeah, I loved him. I loved watching him play football, and probably Peter Schmeichel.
Yeah. My three would have to be Henri, Cristiano Ronaldo, and either Giggs, Scholes, or Owen. Probably Giggs.
Yeah. Owen was so live back in the day to watch. Like,
oh my god, Owen was so, man. So sick.
I was his biggest fan in like 2002.
See the final. Arsenal outplayed Liverpool.
Oh yeah, then he just snatched it from you lot.
I know, but the referee fucked us over that game, man.
Yeah.
Stefan Onsho was saving goals on the line with his hands.
Was he?
Yeah.
All I can remember was those finishes, the left foot one. And the thing is, because Evans knew it was going in, because it was Michael Owen, like, he just
The thing about Thomas Rosicky, like, when one of your favourite players actually joins your team, ultimate gas. And then, like,
I love Rosicky. He hit two worldies.
Like, the day that he signed, you hit, like, two worldies for...
I don't think you guys understand how happy I was when we signed Carlos Tevez, because I tried to follow... Because I was quite... Nobody really knew about streaming when I started university. So when I was younger, I was one of the few kids with laptops, and I found streaming, just being in Nigeria, finding ways to watch.
Right, while you're surfing for porn, you come across like...
No, I'm not you, Lewis. Anyway, from early, I've been watching like a lot of foreign football before quite a lot of people have. So I've always... I'm talking to Tevez when he had the trim.
The trim.
The lines in his head.
The trim,
bro. The days when he used to be at Corinthians, where he actually used to be fast. Yeah. So when we signed Tevez, I was like, oh my God, Tevez, I was gassed.
Had he lost his pace by the time he came to United?
Yeah, he was way quicker.
Really?
Way.
Wow. My friend used to bang on about him as well, but I never got to watch him at Corinthians.
I think the last time I remember Tevez being prime, prime physically Tevez, was probably, I'm not sure if you guys remember, friendly, I think it was England, Argentina, I think I was in Geneva, where it was 2-0, and I think we played like a 4-1, we played like a 4-4 diamond, where you had Ledley King, Lampard, Gerrard, and... I think Lampard, Gerrard and Joe Cole off Reen Owen.
Oh my god, I remember we played Ledley King in midfield. What?
When I say Juan Román Riquelme made everybody in England just chase shadows for the whole game. Mm. And because you've got Riquelme, he's physically a mess.
Like, was that one when it was 3-2 IO when they stole England stole at the end? Yeah, I watched that game.
Riquelme
that game.
Oh, Batistuta as well.
He was a goal scorer.
I remember Batistuta being like a monster on the old Pro Evos and
FIFA 98. He was a goal scorer.
FIFA 98 was the first game I got, but I never really
remember. How old are you? What? Ruby, how old are you? 98.
I'm 18. I was born in 96.
What the hell? Why?
You're 2.
98.
I was playing Xbox when I was 2. We got a PlayStation 1 and I started playing it when I was like 4 years old.
Oh, you were 3 when you were 2, man.
That's when I love my little brother. He's been playing it since he was like 3.
But yeah, I'm
like 5 years old.
I remember that game, Ayo. Then he hit that free kick. Everyone thought he was going to strike it. But then he just chipped it. And nobody was ready. And
now, you know what? What about players that maybe didn't bang, but you loved the idea of him? If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they didn't really bang, but you loved them because of just who they were or the ideal of that player.
That makes sense. No, oh.
Yeah. My person is Johan Gorkov.
I liked him as well, man.
He was tech king.
Like watching Zidane, bro. It was crazy. Closest I've seen to him. Physically, yeah, it was nuts. That was a shit. He didn't have the mentality, man.
Yeah, do anything.
Do you know what? When we first signed Anderson, I loved it in the 07-08 season.
Anderson was amazing.
But you know, people make those jokes about, remember when Anderson bossed Fabregas? He bullied him.
Yeah, he was bullying guys because he was matching for tech.
Anderson
then overpowered him. Anderson
will come on, he will lick a 60-yard through ball, or he will just get it pop drive past foot. Oh, I used to love Anderson. Oh, why do you have to be so fat?
Do you remember the goal that Ronaldo scored against West Ham in 07-08, and it came from a Berbatov flick on the line, and then he squared it.
That came from
an Anderson through ball, and I remember a lot of that season. He was putting so many nice passes around, but then he just sort of faded into
injuries and being fatness.
Am I right? Do you regret Fergie making him into a central player?
No, because I think if he applied himself, he would have been a beast.
Yeah.
But don't you wish you had got to see that sort of...
Like for me,
that Porto.
I was surprised because I remember because the season before he played up front. Remember, I think he played against you.
He played second striker, yeah. He played second striker.
And he was just driving past all you. And I was thinking, wow, Anderson, well, how are we going to fit him in? They played the centre mid. I was thinking, huh? Fergie, is he taking these pills or something? Mm. I was confused.
Yeah, and if you remember the very start of 12-13, I think. No, 11-12.
Hey, him and Cleverley.
Him and Cleverley together, yeah.
They were
the partnership in the 8-2 against Arsenal.
Yeah.
One of my friends was on about that, you know, like, oh, that's the best midfield in the league. I say, hey, leave it, man. Forget about it.
And then Cleverley got injured and he hasn't been the same since.
Yeah, they beat us 4-1. I remember we were beating teams and we played City. That's when Balotelli did the why always me, brought up his t-shirt. And then,
that's all Evans' fault, and then Evans and Rio's afterwards. But anyway, let's forget about that game. But yeah, Kane, do you know you said the player of the idol you like? I think mine also is. Remember Carlos Eduardo for Porto, or Carlos Alberto?
Yeah, the winger, the white player.
Yeah, the winger / attacking midfielder. So techie.
Wait.
So techie.
Can we just take in like that Deportivo team as well?
Well, Valeron,
Juan Fran. Jalminio.
I'm not gonna lie, I never understood Diego Tristan. I didn't know what kind of striker he was. I was just like,
Roy Mackay. Roy Mackay.
Roy Mackay is the only one. Valeron.
Valeron was so strong.
I remember Roy Mackay. I always just felt him like a watered down Ruud van Nistelrooy.
Yeah,
that's true.
Didn't he score the fastest goal in the Champions League ever?
Wasn't that Gilberto? I thought that was Gilberto.
Yeah, Gilberto took it afterwards, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think the number 10s of when I was growing up were a lot more gifted than the ones we have now.
I don't even say that. I think they're wavy. I don't know if they're more gifted because...
Yeah. I see wavy as a gift, in my opinion, so that's
what I don't think certain number 10s will be able to... I don't know if they'll be able to hack the pace and, like, the tactical... demands that our number 10s have.
True. Yeah, but if you're not taking into account that these guys kind of developed in this era, like...
No, but that's what I'm saying, like... It's,
the game's fed up. Like, if you tried to put, like, guys from the 70s in this game, they'd struggle as well, because...
No, that's what I'm saying. It's a 50-50. Could go one way, could go the other, because maybe someone couldn't hack it at all. Some would have welcomed it. Some of them would have, you know, adapted. So, my thing is... When you start comparing players from different generations, you start getting into very murky waters because and then there's all sorts of attention.
Raquel May will be the best player if you're here right now. I'll take that for free, man.
I'll tell you who else was a baller. Laudrup.
Oh, my God. I remember 98. Was it 98? I think it was Denmark 98.
Nah, that was Brian. That wasn't Michael. That was Brian.
Michael's a real baller. Brian was
Michael's a real baller, bro.
Michael was nuts.
I think I'm too young to remember.
Michael,
I remember the celebration. I don't know if you remember the goal. It was in 98 where he scored and he ran across the pitch and he did like a slide and he just like relaxed on the floor.
The freak. I remember that Denmark team. They got to like the quarters, I swear.
You guys are old, man.
Guy, bro.
Who's that? Lewis.
I'm Lewis, bro. You look about 40. You're trying to say we look old, bro. Get out of here, bro.
Listen, Ayo, can you shut up, please?
Listen to the guys, who are like 48, and they've been divorced like twice. their kids don't take their calls. All they do is, they open a calf and they make sure they shut early so they go watch their Arsenal.
It's calm because like, when you're 50 years old, you still look the same. Like, you look young for your age.
Reverse Benjamin Button syndrome, man.
God. Benjamin Button will fuck the good looks from that.
Anyway, guys, I think we should leave it there.
I can see Lewis earning a calf. I can see it so bad. Those are pictures of Arsenal Ian Wright on the wall. And
Ray Parler. Don't forget Ray Parler.
A signed JVC shirt. I can see it already.
All right, before we go, Ayo, do you want to send a message to anyone?
Everybody, football in 2 weeks, everybody's dead.
Well, there you go. I think we'll leave it on that note. Thanks for listening. Thank you to my guests. You've been amazing. Thank you for all your listeners' questions. And we will see you next week.
See you next week, guys.
Bye.
Later.